As varied as our topography and soils, as rich as our resources, so varied and rich are the voices and stories of the folks around us. Come neighbor a bit with me, Sam Stroop. Grab a cup of coffee, pull up a comfy chair, let's get to talking. Out here in the county, next door neighbors are the folks that you share fences with. And if you have livestock, it's how you stay in touch. Often a tree goes down on the fence, unawares, and until a neighbor calls and you find out one or several of your critters want neighboring. Jerome and Kathleen Teese, our neighbors to the west, their bull often came visiting us. We didn't seasonally breed our herd of dairy cows, so there was always some cow acting in allurement. My half of the fence was just okay. Sometimes a tree had fallen. Sometimes a bull would just play bulldozer and push through the gate. Usually when the one-night stand was over, Ferdinand would head home, and I'd see what needed fixing, and all was well till next time. When we got to over 200 goats, they all went visiting Jerome once. He called up on the phone and said, "Hey, they're all over here. Looks like several hundred of them. But leave them for a few days, because they're eating all the cockleburrs." Cockleburrs had been our scourge since the tornado. It picked them up in the river bottoms and dumped them in its path on our farms. So fences and critters have kept our family and the Teese family in touch over the years. So let's get to talking to Jerome and Kathleen. Okay, I'm talking to Jerome and Kathleen Teese, and they're my neighbors up the hill. And I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going to start out by telling a story that we've never shared with you, and I think you'll find real interesting. My wife's a worrywart. And I remember after we had our three sons, she was there one night, couldn't sleep, and was worrying. And the next morning it was, "Sam, if we both get killed in a car wreck, who's going to raise our three sons?" And we went through the family and decided, you know, who we'd really love to have raise our sons would be Jerome and Kathleen Teese.
Oh, how nice. So, well, that's great.
Take that as a compliment. And then you can probably also go, "Thank God they didn't die, because we didn't need three more rowdy sons to raise."
They're grown.
Well, at least maybe we get a free veterinary deal.
There you go.
Yeah, that would have been a plus.
Right. But, yeah, and, you know, we never went anywhere with that, as you know.
Right, oh, yeah. Right.
But
well, that was nice. That's a compliment.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. We've always been delighted to have you all for neighbors and peek in on your lives once in a while.
Well,
you probably enjoy once in a while peeking down the hill at our lives and
sure.
Scratching your head and wondering, well, how do they make it down there?
No.
See the goats.
Right.
Yeah.
Jerome, how far back do you think the Teeses go in Howard County? Have you got any idea?
Oh, my. You have any idea, Kathleen, when...
Did they come in the German immigrants in the 1880s or whatever?
Right, and they first settled in the Aholt Bottom, and they were sponsored by the Fimler family. And back then, one family, you know, would come over and they'd sponsor another family. Mm-hmm. And they'd help take care of them and feed them until they found a farm and could make a living on their own. And they started in the bottom.
Yeah.
And then they, after a flood, I think it was, they came out east of Glasgow.
Okay.
And they started on the Tony Teese farm.
Ah.
Originally.
Right.
And then... the brothers, there were brothers, and they were known as Teese brothers back then. And I can't tell you exactly what year it was without looking it up, but Jerome's grandfather, Henry Teese, bought the farm over where Danny lives now.
Right.
And they moved the big two-story house from the Tony Teese farm over to the farm here on the highway.
Wow.
Probably wasn't a highway back then.
Yeah.
And
they crossed the railroad tracks and everything and lived in the house all the way over here.
Moved it
with mules.
Huh.
And pulled this big two-story house
all
the way over here. It's probably, 2 miles, 3 miles, cross country.
Yeah.
They crossed the railroad tracks, and I remember my grandfather telling the story when they were going up over the railroad tracks. The women stayed in the house and cooked.
Good grief.
For the crew that was moving. Mm-hmm. That particular day, they stopped just before the railroad, going over the railroad track. And they could only get a half a cup of coffee because it was too silent.
Ah, oh
my. And that's how they got moved over where the home place is now on 5 and 240 down here. Mm-hmm. And when my grandfather kind of retired, they had how many boys?
Oh, about five or six.
Five or six boys, and my dad being the second from the youngest. My grandfather started with the oldest and said, "Do you want to take over the farm?" And went all the way down, and it got to my dad, and he said, "I would like to." And his younger brother said he didn't want it either.
That's wild.
That's how my dad got started farming.
Mm-hmm. Now, your dad's name was Joe?
Joe.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Joe Tease.
And your mom's name?
Rita.
How many acres was that farm?
Originally, I would say maybe 100.
Okay, yeah.
And when Dad passed, I think they had about 500.
Oh, my.
Mm-hmm. Huh. They had acquired, neighboring farms and so forth over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And now my youngest brother lives on the home place down there. And we have moved up here close to the Stroop family.
Right.
So, and we've lived here since, we moved in an old house, lived in an older house over there close to your farm.
Right.
1970.
That's when we married.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived there, 2 years or 3 years?
4 years.
4 years, boy.
I bet that was a shack.
Yeah.
It was.
It was.
It was.
Hogs had ran through that house.
Before we moved in, yes.
We started our marriage in an absolute shack.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. We didn't own the house. This house belonged to the Cokes family who I was renting the farm from.
Yeah.
And I remember Mrs. Cokes said, "Whatever you want to do to it, it's your house. You can just live there."
Huh.
And we kind of halfway remodeled it. And
This one here that we're in now, you mean?
No, that's
the one up on
the old house.
Okay,
the old house over there. And then we lived there for 4 years.
Okay.
And then we had bought this acreage over here, or what was it, 80 acres over here a few years before that, and decided to build this house over here. That would have been about 74. 74. We've lived here ever since.
How many times have you added on to this house?
Once.
Yeah, just once.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was that while the kids were all still here?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
In 1985.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we built this house in 74.
Okay.
And we moved in May of 1974.
Okay. Back to Joe and Rita,
mm-hmm.
what kind of farming did they do?
Well, Dad, I can remember him planting corn with horses yet. He did have a tractor that he tilled the ground with,
mm-hmm.
and back in those days, everything was plowed,
right.
moorboard plowed, right. and disced two or three times. I do remember him planting with a two-row corn planter and horses.
What was the tractor?
Was a case, small case.
All right.
Like a VAC case, I think was.
And would pull three bottoms, maybe?
No, it would pull two.
Okay.
Would be the max, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
which is one more than four horses would pull.
Probably right. Probably just a little bit more than the horses would handle.
Right.
And then he had bought an older International F-12 tractor, and it was about a two plow tractor too.
And hogs and beef.
Hogs was Dad's one of his main enterprises.
Okay.
He was probably one of the larger hog producers in that era.
Mm-hmm.
He farrowed to finish, of course. Like,
how many sows do you think he might have maxed out at? 70?
I'd say 60 possibly. Okay. Probably 60 sows at his peak.
A-frame buildings.
He had A-frame buildings and other buildings like odds and ends. And then in about 1960, I would say, he built a 12-stall fairing house. And he had, it didn't have crates in it, just had pins in it. And did very well with it. And then in a few years, my younger brother went in partnership with him in the hogs. And then they built a 24-stall fairing house with the crates and all of that. And they had a nursery. They, you know, kept the hogs in a nursery building. And then they went into a, he built a grower building. And then at that point, I expect they had, probably 120 sows or more. And they first started out, they raised them on dirt, the hogs. And then right before my dad passed, they built a finishing building, a completely enclosed building. And they put them in there, and then a few years later, my brother, well, my mother actually, built a grower building, which was two-deck building. They put the small pigs up on the upper deck, and then on the lower deck, they put like 60 to 80-pound pigs, and then moved them into a finishing building and finished them.
I expect you can kind of feel like your dad and mom and brother Danny were on the cutting edge of hog production back then.
Probably so, yes.
Raised pretty much all the corn for them.
Raised all, just almost all the corn for them.
And I don't have to ask what kind of chores you had as a kid. You were busy castrating hogs all the time.
We did a few. Castrated. And Dad, in his early years, had, and I don't remember all of this. I can remember a little of it. He had about 20 milk cows.
Okay.
Milked them by hand.
Yeah.
And I can remember when I was real small.
Right.
Getting up like at 7 o'clock in the morning, and he'd been out since 4 milking.
Right.
And then he would milk them. He'd work in the field all day and then come in at night, after dark a lot of nights, and milk those cows.
Separated the cream, put it on train at Steinmetz, fed the
hogs. He might have early in the early years.
Okay.
But there was a truck came by. We put it, not bulk milk, it was in 10-gallon cans.
Right.
And we had a cooler in the later years. The early years, they used to put it in a 10-gallon, the 10-gallon cans, and put it in wash tubs and pump water out of the well, the cool water, to preserve it until the truck come and picked it up.
Right.
And it, that milk went to Concordia. There was a creamery over there, and they...
Did you go to school at Glasgow High School, or did you go up to St. Joseph's?
I went to St. Mary's my first 8 years, and then I went to Glasgow R2 for the last 4.
Did you have any time for 4-H and FFA?
I was in 4-H from little till probably in high school.
Okay.
And I was in the Steinman's 4-H Club, which my wife's father organized.
Mm-hmm. Huh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And I didn't know her at that time.
Yeah.
My mother still would always tell me about we came out here to start the 4-H Club. And I picked up the pointer off the blackboard, and I whopped a little boy over the head, and she always did say that was Jerome. That was my first experience. She said she was so embarrassed.
I'm not sure I even need to ask this question, but what of your dad is in you?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. What would you say, Kathleen?
Good work ethic.
Yeah.
That's hard work.
I was gonna say,
yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We spent a few hard years.
Yeah.
Well,
starting
several.
Out.
Several. I mean, actually, I'll tell a story that I am probably spending more time with my grandchildren than I did my own.
Yeah.
In our early years, I raised hogs too, and farrowed them in Smidley houses.
Right.
And put them out on dirt, and I got into disease problems with them.
Huh.
And when our oldest son graduated from high school, he said, "Dad, I will take care of the hogs." And I had a bad shoulder. I kept getting dislocated. "You go fix your shoulder." And so that year I did. And he, I said, the way we were going to approach this, we were going to sell the male hogs first. And he said, "Well, Dad, we won't have any more pigs." I said, "Exactly." And then I said, "Every time a mama sow or a sow has pigs, we'll put them in the fattening pen and we're selling all the sows." Mm-hmm. And he said, "You're going to quit hogs." Oh. And I said, "Yeah." Mm-hmm. And he was helping me. I had erysipelas, which is called mulberry hearts.
Right.
And
in the hogs, you mean?
In the hogs, yes. And they...
Not in your shoulder.
Not in my shoulder. fortunately, not in my shoulder. We had probably 100 hogs ready to go to market.
Yeah.
Weighing like 220 to 230.
Right.
And that's when they would a lot of times get sick.
Yeah.
And we went over one morning and there was 20 of them dead.
Wow.
Very disheartening.
Yeah.
And... we had to haul all of them out, drag them out. They was in sheds and, you know, low huts, and it was. And that was kind of the end of my hog era.
That made Mike tough too, didn't it?
Yeah.
Your son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mike helped me a lot with the hogs.
Yeah.
He really did. And
did he miss them? Did he feel like it was a battle that should have been fought longer and harder?
No, I don't think he did. I don't think he did. And my wife, I'll just let you tell her what her take is on. Life after hogs.
That's what I called it, life after hogs, because I remember one Christmas Eve, you know, it was below zero and all the hog waters were frozen we just had quite a time. And of course we didn't get to go where we were planning to go. And I mean, that happened a number of times, you know.
Sure.
You had to, the hogs had to come first, of course. You had to take care of them or they were going to die. And, so anyway, after we got rid of the hogs, then we could go a few places.
Back to another story. We lived in the older house over here next to the Stroop farm. And when Michael was probably, what, two or three, Kathleen calls one day frantic. "I've lost Mike." He had a little puppy dog. And we had a fence around the yard, and the dog would dig under the fence, and Mike would slide under the fence with the dog, and she couldn't find him. And so, of course, you know, everybody's frantic. We come looking, and in the evening, a lot of times, I had a water behind the pond. We would walk down there and check it. So we start looking, and where is Mike, you know? And there he was, sitting down by that hog water, splashing water out, and probably 2 or 250 head of hogs around him.
Oh, yeah.
Just a little kid, you know. I mean, naturally, it was a relief that we found him, but...
We saw the dog first.
Yeah,
that's kind of how we traced the dog, and the dog took us to Michael.
We would always raise a pig or two to butcher.
Yeah.
And we had one old Hampshire that was getting about ready to butcher, and... I don't remember which one's son, but he was probably about 3, maybe 4. He was standing out there next to the hog, and the hog had his mouth around his arm, just kind of playing with his arm.
Oh, my,
oh my goodness, yeah.
And it was one they'd sit on, and you know, they were buddies, but...
Still,
it's scary. But it wasn't 200 like you were talking about.
But I mean, they were wondering what he was doing there, but he was sitting on there, just splashing water out of the water, you know, like a kid would do. So that was Mike's early experience with hogs.
How did you two meet?
How did we meet?
Leon Hammonds, his Jerome's cousin, introduced us.
All right.
I knew Leon, and he'd been in the Army and came home.
Okay.
And I think we went, or Leon, we had a kind of a blind date. Leon said, "We're going to pick you up. I want you to meet somebody." And we went to a dance.
How old were y'all when you first met?
I was 16.
Okay.
Young.
And I was about 20, I guess.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And you were in school at Fayette.
Right. I was still in high school. Took Jerome to the prom.
Huh.
And I was so bashful.
Right.
I was afraid to ask him to go to the prom that year, and I got my friend Susie to ask him for me.
Susie Himmelberg?
Yes.
Interesting. Yeah. Did you have any qualms about marrying a farmer?
No.
Okay.
In fact, I was pretty well acquainted with farm life because my dad was an extension agent and later an agronomist, and dad always had cattle, and he had hogs at one time.
Did you realize that it was going to be a vow of poverty for several years?
Well, no. I didn't think about it at that time, really.
Well, that was probably the last thing on our mind.
Well, you know, we could live on almost not much money back then.
Right.
We had hardly any money.
Yeah, it seems like when we taxed time, we'd figure, how did we live on $3,000 this year?
Well, and I think when we married, the time I put a little money in the old house, Kathleen had a little bit of savings, and I think that was our nest egg, I guess.
Yeah. It wasn't much.
What, $300 or $400?
Yeah.
That's all we had.
Of course, you know, health insurance was so, it was not a factor back then.
No, it wasn't.
No. Yeah, we never it was just hardly anything.
Right. We got along fine, and then all of a sudden, just like that, bam, bam, 2-3 years in a row, it skyrocketed, and whoops, I guess Kathleen's going back to teaching, or we won't have health insurance.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
One of the first things I had to learn was how to use a wringer washing machine, because we didn't have real water back then, of course. We had a cistern, and so you had to conserve water, and so, of course, you washed the cleanest clothes first, and then followed up and with the work clothes at the very end, you use the same water over and over. And that was kind of a new experience for me, but I learned.
When you moved to this house, was there rural water going by or not?
I think it just had went
it
by.
Just got here,
And was it prime water or Glasgow?
Glasgow.
Okay.
Yeah, it was... We were high enough elevation here that our ground level at our home and the water tower were 45 feet higher than the base of the water tower. And occasionally, in the early years, the water tower would go empty and we didn't have any other source of water. And about time the children had little children and it was a little challenging. And a neighbor and I went to the water board and asked if there's anything they could do for us. Well, they said, we need somebody to be on this board. You got this problem. So I served on the rural water district board for 20 years as their clerk. And I finally convinced them it was time for somebody else to do it.
Well, you know, when your hogs are dying, you're not making money, but they were a cash cow for a while.
So was it pretty
tough making a switch from them to cattle, or did it, were you kind not of eased
really.
Into
we,
it anyway?
At that point, we had got far enough along that we probably wasn't making very much money them because of the death loss.
Yep.
And then also, some of them that lived never did do well with the erysipelas. And it wasn't hard to quit. And then we started, keeping a few more heifers and cows. And now we're just cows and grain.
You never worked away from home till you took the newspaper job.
Right. I worked before I was married, but not since I was married. Right. I stayed home with the kids, raised a big garden, a few chickens.
Yeah, me too. You had some peacocks for a while.
I sure did. I had peacocks, a wild turkey. We had guineas. We had game chickens. We had rabbits. The kids had rabbits. They still talk about all the different animals that we had. And now my oldest daughter is, her kids are in 4-H and they have sheep and they're really into livestock. They have cattle too, and they're very active and in the fair, show sheep, and they went to the state fair with their sheep this year. And one of our granddaughters sews really well, and she made a wool outfit, and actually two of the granddaughters did that. and modeled them at the local Macon County Fair and at the Missouri State Fair.
So all the years of raising family and now your grandchildren, eh?
Or just yeah. a merry life.
When you look back, these were when the memories were the best.
Well, when all the kids were in 4-H and you know, had projects.
Middle school and high school years.
Right. Yeah. And we had kids playing basketball. We were busy between chores and basketball and all their activities and speech meets and so forth, FFA. And
those were the best times for us, too, was the late. You're probably like me. I don't even remember the kids when they were babies.
Not very much.
On the tractor all the time.
Yeah. Right.
And but when they could kind of help on the farm some, and we made a point of Sunday nights was party night at the farm. We'd invite all the kids from Armstrong down, and me and the boys would plan all the activities and campfire and games and sports and music. And
that was nice.
It was fun.
Yeah.
I'd go into town with a pickup, and we'd kidnap 30 kids.
Oh, that was great.
And in today's world, you'd probably be arrested for hauling kids.
All right, with no seatbelts. Just threw them in the back.
Put them in the pickup.
Then four times a year on the equinoxes and the solstices, we would have campouts with all the kids from Armstrong, too, between milkings.
Wow.
Oh, yeah?
Well, and so that gave them the experience of the farm, and they could see what you do every day. And
we just built memories.
Sure.
That's what we did. Mm-hmm. We still sit around and talk about all those times.
I bet so. That's great.
Camping out on an island in the Missouri River, you know, and camping out on the winter solstice, and it was 7 degrees.
Oh, boy, that was good.
But good times of memories.
Sure.
So those were the good times. What were the rough times? Probably going through all that hog disease time.
Well, like Kathleen said, probably when the kids were small and we would plan like Christmas and things like that. Like she said, the waters would be froze up and you wanted to go, but you had to take care of the hogs. Yeah. And that was probably the toughest time, wouldn't you say?
Probably so. Mm-hmm. And maybe the early 80s was kind of a tough time
it was
high interest rate, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we just bought a real expensive farm. I have two brothers, and we farmed together since we were kids.
Yeah.
And I'm the oldest, 74. So we farmed a long time together, and just like today, we're cleaning out grain bins. Mm-hmm. We was all there, all three of us, along with my second son. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's been and we farmed years, all these years together. Started out on Dad's farm, working as kids, and I guess I rented the Cokes farm here before we were married. Mm-hmm. And then we lived on that farm for, we rented it, how many years? Oh, lots of years.
Yeah.
Probably 20. Mm-hmm. Rented, probably 20 years. And all at once they decided they wanted to sell and we bought it. Mm-hmm. And and going back to the 80s, we had bought a neighboring farm that my dad owned ground on one side, and we rented the farms on the other three sides, and it's county road on the other. Well, it was 167 acres.
Right.
And we wanted it real bad.
Yeah.
And we paid, this is in 1980, we paid $1,432 an acre.
Wow. What was the interest on it?
At the end, when we locked interest for 3 years at 9%, and it went to 12.5%. It was on a variable rate.
Wow.
Needless to say, we didn't make any money on that farm. Right. But fortunately, we had a lot of rented ground. And we were able to weather the storm.
Right.
But we didn't make any money on that farm.
Yeah.
For a lot of years.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then we bought, the Rich farm. There was two farms there. The three of us bought together, and so we had several farms together.
Yeah.
And as we got older, one day we sat down. We in our 60s, and each one of us has four children. Mm-hmm. And said, you know, we own all these farms together.
Right.
What's the next generation going to do?
Yeah.
So at that point, we appraised them all. Mm-hmm. And you take this parcel, and I'll take this. And we separated them, and we still do everything together, own all our machinery together. But at the end of the day, when we take a crop to town, some of it's mine, some of it's Paul's, some of it's Danny's. So,
do you realize how unusual that situation is for brothers to be able to work together like that? That is so unique.
Yeah, I'm 74. Paul is 72. Danny is 66.
No, he is. He'll be 68 in June.
68. Okay.
Paul will be 72 in September. Okay. So yeah, Paul's 71 right now.
What do you think of the dynamics that made that work? Was it the way your folks raised you, or
the early family life? It wasn't. Everyone had their own bedroom. The three boys had our own bedroom, and we worked. We didn't ask questions if there was something to be done on the farm. Well, you know, we didn't argue who's going to do it. We got to do this. We just went and did it. You know, there was no questions asked. And my dad's philosophy always was, don't say go on, say come on. And he was a leader.
He'd always work with them.
He worked with us, you know, everything we did. He passed at the age of 59. So, you know, we had some good years with him. And as other farms become available, we've rented farms together. Actually, at one point, there was a split of four ways, my dad and the three of us. And then when he passed, well, then the three of brothers took over.
Well, before you divided things... There were the three of you brothers, and you were renting and owned. How many acres total do you think?
Oh, I guess probably close to 3,000.
Okay, that's what I was going to guess.
At the max, you know, that was probably the max.
Right. Things kind of come and go, but amazing. Yeah, well, I know looking up the hill and thinking about you guys, I just have always over the years thought, this is so unusual. And I never see any storm clouds going up from you guys fighting and feuding.
Well, there's always issues that you say, well, you know, you don't feel like maybe it should have been. But we've always been able to resolve them and not really have a big stew about it.
Right.
Just, well, you know, this will work. We'll make this work. And
the
forward.
Wives stayed out of it. You all didn't
pretty well,
meddle.
Yeah. No, we didn't. We've all gotten along and, no problems.
It used to be harvest time would be, I would usually leave the house at 7, and some nights it would be 1 or 2 in the morning before I came home. That's when the children were little, too. So Kathleen was very instrumental in raising our children.
This is probably going to be more a question for your son, Mike, when I talk to him, but I'll ask you, too. How do you feel about farming going out? What's going on? Do you feel like there's some future for the Teases here yet, or is it kind of scary?
I'm about to the point that I don't have to worry about it too much more.
Exactly.
I've actually rented out one of my farms to my younger son.
All right.
Just because he's got a family and we've been at it long enough that we can survive without it. And Kathleen has inherited a farm, and Mike rents it.
Okay.
So the two boys rent two of our farms.
All right, yeah.
And that's that helps, you know. And our younger son, Mark, when he's not farming, work construction. He drives a dozer and track hose and that type of equipment. But this winter, the winter being what it was, he's helped Dad all winter. And Dad really appreciates it.
Yeah, I see the tractor lights every morning up there on the hill. And I keep thinking, well, I haven't got my butt out there on the tractor yet.
and we do. Since he's been helping, we use two tractors.
Okay.
I bought a small silage wagon that we can haul our silage to the separate farms.
Yeah.
In that, and he's there every morning, and I load him up, and I bought a silage wagon last fall, and I've never used it.
Huh.
He's used it every day.
Okay. How long do morning chores take?
Depending.
How many bales we got set out?
Depends on whether it's a hay day or just a silage day.
Right.
What would you say, Kevin?
Till 11 o'clock, probably.
Okay. Yeah, usually from about 7 to 11. And,
yeah.
And if we have some problems or something, it can be 12.
Right.
But about 7 to 11 usually is about what it takes. And right now we're having calves, and it takes a little bit of time. I tag all my calves the same number as my cows the day they're born.
Yeah.
And it takes a little time to do that.
Right.
And every evening I have a good helper goes with me and open gates.
Okay.
That's my job. Save him some steps.
I guess I don't have my Kathleen very well trained, do I?
Well,
I like swinging gates. I don't like a gate that drags.
that was a requirement. The gates have to swing.
Right.
If they drag, she don't fool with them.
Well, I think when I want to talk to farmers that are optimistic, I would come to the Teeses.
We've had a good life.
Yeah.
We've had, and I would guess you'd say we've had a successful life. It's we started out with, like I say, basically nothing.
Yeah.
And by having the brothers, we were able to have a little better machinery to work with, you know.
We get a couple of farmer magazines. I don't know if you do or not. Probably about three. One, Successful Farming. Did you get that one?
Yeah, we get that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it seems like every issue I pick up a farming magazine now, there's always an article about farmers. I know you're thinking about suicide out there, and here's how you need to deal with it.
Well,
and I don't know if you're noticing that.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
Yeah.
I always watch the U.S. Farm Report on Saturday, and they talk about dairy farmers having...
Oh,
a lot
awful.
Of depression and a lot of problems with, you know, to make ends meet.
Yeah.
And
and that's really a hard life, isn't it, Sam? To dairy, you've got
a lot. Well, it gets you out of a lot of things you don't want to do.
Okay. That's
but you still have to milk no matter what's going on in your life.
To me, milking was always very relaxing.
Was it?
Unless I was super exhausted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and some cow who I knew was wanting to murder me would be the next one in line.
Yeah,
you know, that wasn't relaxing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but most time I considered the milking very relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
And I can honestly say that was the job I hated the most.
Interesting. Yeah, well, you were doing it by hand.
Yeah, we milked by hand. It seemed like we would come in from the field and usually dark. And then the darn old cows wouldn't be there. We'd have to go walk in the dark down the pasture and get them up. And I would want to go see Kathleen, and we had to milk first.
Right. No, when I finished up down there, I had a double-eight herringbone.
Mm-hmm.
So once the boys left, I upgraded, and I could milk all the cows pretty fast.
Oh, well, that was great.
That's good.
And then I went to once-a-day milking, because, see, we were delivering milk to 400 families.
Yeah.
And you just couldn't do everything.
Mm-hmm. No.
So we went to once-a-day milking. It hurt production, but it gave us a life back.
Mm-hmm.
And,
that's good.
Yeah. So you figure things out over time, don't you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I don't know if it was the last one or not, Successful Farming. Maybe it was. They were talked about, you know, some economists have done the study, right, wrong, or indifferent, but he said 40% of the farmers right now are making money, 40% are right on the line. They're not going broke, but the margin is so slim.
It is very slim.
And then 20% might as well consider themselves gone. And I don't know that we see those numbers that way here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why.
No, we seem to be, we don't have as many people going broke.
Right.
As
well, we're all older and we've figured
well, that's
it out.
We've kind of weathered the storm, mm-hmm. more or less. And
those of us that made it through the 80s,
yeah,
we're still here.
They were tough.
And so mm-hmm. we've learned some lessons from that.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah. Back in the 80s, you didn't go out to eat. You
no.
didn't do anything extra
yeah.
that you didn't mm-mm. have to do, but it was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have developed neuropathy in my feet, and we went to a specialist
mm-hmm.
in Columbia and trying to figure out what was going on.
Yeah.
And his question to me was, have you ever sprayed chemicals?
Huh.
And, well, yes, I sprayed chemicals. Well, a lot of them, yeah. You know, a couple thousand acres.
Mm-hmm.
Well, did you have a cab? Well, no, we didn't have any cabs.
Wow.
And he talked a while, and he said, well, what did you spray?
Mm-hmm.
And I start naming off insecticides that mm-hmm. I had sprayed. And he said to me, insecticides will only stay in your system 3 days.
Wow.
But herbicides,
mm.
and I start naming them off, and ooh. I came to atrazine.
Yeah.
And he said, that's the one that a lot of old farmers are coming up with this
wow.
neuropathy because of atrazine.
Wow.
I never heard that before,
mm.
but he had to give me an answer, so that
sure.
was the answer I got.
It was a theory, I think he
a
had.
A theory more than...
Because he's just seen so many
right.
farmers that age
yeah.
come up with neuropathy.
Right. Now, what is neuropathy? How's it affect
your feet? It's like sometimes my feet feel like I've got driving hot nails
oof.
Into my feet, a real tingling. Oh. Really, it hurts
mm-hmm.
sometimes,
yeah.
yes, and sometimes not as bad. It burned, your feet burn just
okay.
like they're kind of on fire sometimes. And
yeah, you pretty well described it.
Yeah.
People that have diabetes have neuropathy, but he doesn't have diabetes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so
yeah.
so the doctor said, mm-hmm. well, this is the theory I have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, March 1st, we were supposed to have had this soybean tariff thing all figured
mm-hmm.
out. It hasn't happened. How do you feel about that?
I feel like they should have it taken care of. Maybe it would have helped our prices. The economists we had at this meeting last night didn't think it was going to make that much difference.
Mm.
That was his theory again.
Still below bean prices, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Even if they
bean and corn prices both. He was more optimistic about corn prices than he were bean prices.
Mm-hmm.
So
he says there's too many beans carryover
mm-hmm.
beans. Soybeans.
Yeah.
And we had outstanding bean yields.
And it seems like beans are kind of the crop of choice around the world, too, probably for the
mm-hmm.
same reasons we plant them sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a little cheaper to put out.
Yeah. Your input costs a lot
yeah.
less.
Mm-hmm. And they're learning all the tricks, and their yields are good.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I was in Brazil in 75, and soybeans were just starting to take off down there.
Yeah.
And there's this huge country. I thought, oh my God,
yeah.
this is going to affect us.
Yeah.
And then
it has.
I was in China for a while.
Oh, were you?
Hong Kong, and
uh-huh.
then we went over into China. That's why I was in the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw two things. The Chinese are extremely smart.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I saw was they really don't like us.
Uh-huh.
And that's a little scary, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is.
You know, they may smile at us.
Mm-hmm.
But
they really don't.
They would
like
to.
If they
like
get their beans somewhere else, they'll do
yeah.
it.
They will if they can.
Right.
And they would probably like to own more American
yep.
soil.
Yep.
If possible.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a group through Extension came and met with. It was in probably the 90s somewhere,
mm-hmm.
From Ecuador.
Yes.
And they wanted to know how we raise soybeans.
You shouldn't have told them, huh?
Yeah. And they wanted to see our machinery,
right.
what we used,
yeah.
and our drills, and
yeah.
so forth, and corn planters.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine said, you should have gave them a bag of cuckoo burrs and said, plant these. It makes it grow better.
Well, the problem in Brazil when I was there was they were really learning how to raise beans. They didn't have any roads to get them to market.
That's
on.
Right.
And
the infrastructure was bad.
Now maybe we're heading that direction. You know?
Well, yeah. The county commissioner here took care of our roads, so we have pretty good roads.
Yeah. What haven't I asked you? We've covered a lot of ground.
What do you think, okay?
Well, as long as your feet kind of hold together, you got some good years ahead of you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, I've got a broken foot right now.
Oh. Yeah.
That's just another story. I guess that's hard-headedness. It hurt for approximately a year.
Yeah. Oh.
And finally, I went to the doctor, and he said, well, you've had your foot broke, and it's starting to mend back. It's been long enough. Oh. And he said that's what he did with... That's what he would have done with surgery. And he said, a lot of times it don't work anyway. And he was very, very honest about what he did.
Yeah.
And
Well, listen, I so appreciate being able to invade your night.
Sure.
And I so appreciate the fact you didn't fall asleep on us.
I was a little concerned because it's been a long day.
Right. We know what those are all about. So I'm going to sign off on this. And thanks again.
All over the state are MFA Farmers Cooperative Exchanges. The saying around Glasgow is MFA stands for the three large Glasgow families, M for Monty, F for Femler, A for Aholt. Too bad it's not MFAT, T for Tees, for their importance to the area agriculture is also dynastic. I hope to interview two other Tees generations, Michael and Paula Tees and their son Colin. We will see, though, because they're busy right now with cows calving, their seed-selling business is hopping, and there'll be corn to plant in 3 to 4 weeks. Right now, my wife Kathleen and I are attending 200 goats that are kidding. These are long, busy days on Howard County farms. So if I don't catch Mike and Colin now, maybe next winter.